sure this will not surprise anyone that my mother also, and she would make all of my outfits when I was a kid, right? Sew everything. She made me a beautiful white suit, bought a black shirt, and of course I would dance, perform this song at weddings as well, because she loved John Travolta. The trio of Saturday Night Fever, Grease, and Urban Cowboy provided the soundtracks of my youth. And it's still, you know what, and guess what? The Bee Gees still hit just right. And Nate can barely contain himself. He wants to get up and dance right now.
That's right.
He can't sit still during this song. How can you?
Well, and then you know, you go right into, oh, yeah, look at Steven.
I don't need to see you that.
Come in here and look at it.
Nope. Nope.
Get up close.
I actually remember our next guest talking about a documentary about the Bee Gees.
I still haven't seen that documentary. I want to see that.
Jeff Jadeo dancing this song. Jeff, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Well, pretty good. I didn't like Sunday Night Football. I thought that was stupid. But I'm looking. On to Washington. Huh? Is that what they say? Oh, geez. Oh, Jeff, what do I do now? Okay, let's get on to it.
You got your Bee Gees, though.
That's right. The Bee Gees will never lose on Sunday Night Football. They will always win. That was, look, you picked Buffalo. Adam Kaplan picked Buffalo. I don't think it was the shock of the century that Buffalo won, but they handled the Chiefs. And the Chiefs looked like they didn't have many answers offensively or defensively. And usually on this show, Nate and I are sky high. Jake's always sky high. That's a whole nother story. But and then it's you come in with the unpopular role of grounding us and giving, you know, bringing us back to reality and giving us the old what for.
But now, cold water in
that's
the face.
Right. You take cold water and you douse Nate with it. But now the roles have reversed because we're down. The Nate's down in the dumps. We're upset, and I'm asking you to try to be, you know, play a different role here and explain to us why it's not as bad as it feels right now. Why it's not as bad as it looked on Sunday Night Football. Come on, Jeff, you can do it.
Well, I think first of all, the schedule is going to be a little bit easier.
Ah.
So this week you're getting a team that is, Chiefs are last in the league in scoring defense. You're getting a team that's 31st in the league in scoring defense. That's got to make you feel good about something. It's a long year. I don't think it's, Serena and Eric Eager and I do a podcast and they ask the same questions and I got the same, you know, the same deal about, you know, I always get cast as being the Chiefs hater. Even though I'm not, I have a lot of friends over there.
And you've also said that I ask way better questions than Seren or Eric Eager. So that's, I appreciate that. You said that off the air. I don't, probably shouldn't have repeated that on the air, but I felt necessary to do that now. But go ahead. Sorry.
But I'll say that I think it's important to recognize that the Chiefs are in a place that every team gets to in the NFL, whether you're really good or really bad. And you've got to figure out what your identity is. You've got to reinvent yourself every year. I think going into the last couple seasons, the last three seasons since Mahomes been the starter after his first year, there's been sort of this expectation that they're always going to be either in the Super Bowl or winning the Super Bowl, and it's just hard to do that every year. No team's ever done that. And so, you know, people look at the Patriots and they say, well, how were they able to do it? And they think it's all Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. And in fact, they reinvented themselves every year during those two decades. Those two guys were together, and they went from being a defense first, you know, running game team to being a wide open team to being a two tight end team to being a defense team again to being a team where they had to have Darrell Revis or Aqib Talib show up to be able to be what they wanted to be. So, I think there are a lot of things that can still happen for the Chiefs. They're still a playoff team. In my mind, they're probably not going to win the AFC West based on how things are going today, than what the Chargers have become. But the reality of it is that there was never going to be a situation where Patrick Mahomes was going to be the dominant quarterback in the NFL over a 10-year stretch. and I've said this before, every decade you're going to have other quarterbacks emerge that are going to be Hall of Fame caliber, who are going to compete for championships. And you're seeing that happen this year. You're seeing Justin Herbert play at a higher level. You're seeing Dak Prescott playing at a higher level. You're seeing Lamar Jackson playing at a higher level. Kyler Murray's emerged. So Josh Allen. And so all these guys, you know, Patrick Mahomes may have been the fastest out of the gate. So all these guys are rising up. And so what the Chiefs have to be able to do is adjust to that. And so I think some of that is having a wake-up call like they had on Sunday. Some of it is making better moves. But I still think they're a playoff team. I still think they'll have a chance to compete for a championship. It's just not as certain as it would have been, you know, 5 weeks ago.
Do you buy into all this talk that Patrick Mahomes is struggling, or that the offense has been figured out by the defenses of the NFL?
I feel like, and I said this 3 years ago when they started off and they were so hot, I said it takes about 3 years for any great offense in the NFL to come back to earth. And so, and that's because a lot of things happen. You know, you have attrition, you have different personnel coming in, you have injuries, you have, sometimes you have players who get really full of themselves and don't work as hard. But I don't feel as if Patrick Mahomes is doing anything less to try to be successful. But what I do see is, you know, they've got a few more chinks in the armor. They haven't been able to solidify that second receiver spot, which has been heavily discussed over the last, you know, whatever it's been, year and a half. The running game has not been what it was when Kareem Hunt was there. And so you've got new offensive linemen. And so what I see more so is the Buccaneers create a blueprint for how to defend Patrick Mahomes. But and I think I put this on the air last year after they played Atlanta or in the playoffs, and a friend of mine who knows the coaching staff down there with the Falcons, and they were, you know, nothing close to being a good team, but they gave the Chiefs a run. Those coaches thought you could still fool Mahomes with some things defensively, that he wasn't as great at seeing some coverages as you might have thought. And so if that's true, and that's still the case, it might explain some of what's happening with the breakdowns and chemistry as far as him being on the same page as the receivers. And I'm sure the receivers are having issues with it. Everybody says, oh, it's just cover two defense, but there's a lot of versions of cover two you can play. And certainly if you can get on with four, we've known that's been a remedy for dealing with issues for a long time in Mahomes. So I think what you're saying is a lot of these good teams are playing, have good defensive fronts, they have talented secondaries, and they're making it tougher because the Chiefs don't have as many weapons to counter what those defenses are doing.
So I was watching NFL Live earlier this week, and I'm a little skeptical a lot of times when they show these things, because I think that the people that are running the video, yeah, you can see what's on the field, but you don't really know what the play call was, what the quarterback's options were in that situation. But all that being said, I think it was Dan Orlovsky put together a clip of several different plays in the Bills game where he felt like Mahomes could have taken the easy 5 to 10 yard gain right off the bat, and kept the team moving down the field, and instead took a couple extra seconds in the pocket to try to wait for the big play down the field to open up, and then ended up having to scramble around and throw the ball out of bounds because it wasn't there. And so the narrative he was building, and I've seen other people say this, is Mahomes just doesn't want to be patient enough to move the ball down the field that way. He might do it for a little while, but at some point he's going to get impatient and he's going to want to take that big shot. Do you buy into that?
I buy more into I think it's part of it. I think it's always been part of his game. But the bigger thing that I see is that when he wants to make a play, he's looking for Kelce or Hill. You know, he'll throw the ball to the other guys if it's not a significant moment. If it's not, if they're up. But when they're down and he's pressing, he's going to those two guys first. And if I can see that, I guarantee you every defensive coordinator, every defensive player they play against sees it as well. And so I'll go back to the Philadelphia game, and especially through in that game, there were four dudes standing around Travis Kelce and threw the football, and he still threw it. I go back to the Baltimore game. The interception he had in that game, he's trying to escape the pocket, and he's trying to flip the ball to Kelce. You know, he gets tripped up. Tavon Young steps in, and he intercepts the football. I probably would guess most of his turnovers have come with the ball going to one of those two guys. And so that's something that I think defenses have picked up on. And it is the way they play offense. Again, there's so much of a reliance on the receivers being able to read what's happening and the quarterback trusting those guys to read that, that I suspect that, you know, there is an over-reliance on those players to a certain extent. And as long as you play defense, no matter how great a player you're playing against, they're going to pick up on what you want to do. And they're going to start leading you to places that they want you to be in, as opposed to you being in situations you want to be in. I almost feel like I beat up as defensive players that I almost feel like teams like seeing him running towards the sidelines now and flushing him because it cuts the field down. And if you were able to take away the two options he has and you're aware that he might try to throw the football back across the field to Tyreek Hill, then there's not much left. And you've got the sideline now with an extra defender. And so I see more of that happening as well. So, yeah, could they be more patient and take more check down, throw the ball to the backs and get more stuff? Yeah. But, you know, they got to – it's kind of who they are. It's kind of asking the Golden State Warriors to start driving to the basket instead of shooting threes. It's easier to do – easier to talk about than to actually do.
Okay, so for the next few weeks, they'll be without Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And so you have Darrell Williams, but also maybe the opportunity to get Jerick McKinnon involved in the pass game a little more as a receiver out of the backfield. I think he could help. Andy Reid said they had planned on getting more snaps for Josh Gordon Sunday night. Didn't work out because of how the game went, but we expect to see him more on Sunday. And so because of the loss of Clyde Edwards-Helaire and utilizing Jerick McKinnon a little bit more, Gordon a little bit more, what do you expect to see these next few weeks as far as an approach offensively from the Chiefs?
Yeah, that's interesting. I do think as much grief as Clyde Edwards-Helaire has endured over the last couple of years, that he brings value as a runner. I mean, you have to respect his ability to run the football. He's had, you know, a couple hundred-yard games this season. He had a couple big games last year when teams were trying to take away the pass. I suspect you might see more short passes than Nate's point. You might see them try to do more stuff to make that part of the running game to take some pressure off Mahomes. Ultimately, you can't, as great as he is, you can't drop back and go 50 passes a game and win games doing that. Because either your quarterback's going to get hit or you're going to have turnovers. You have to do something to get teams off balance. So I would expect you'd probably see more quick passes, or you'd probably see more jet sweeps, more things just to keep the defense a little bit off kilter, especially a defense like the football team has. They're not playing well, but up front they've got four first round picks playing, and this is going to be a big matchup for the Chiefs' offensive line because a lot of these guys like Chase Young can really wreck a game plan for you. So I think they'll try to do more stuff, more short, quick hitting stuff, just to get guys into a rhythm and get the chains moving.
Jeff Chedia is our guest. Jeff, defensively, Steve Spagnuolo has had to answer many questions about Daniel Sorensen, and he made a point of saying, look, it's not fair just to blame one guy, and then that's true because there's plenty of blame to go around for poor play on the defensive side of the football. But, you know, he keeps getting asked, well, you know, what about Sorensen? What about Thornhill? Is there going to be a change in the lineup? And it almost feels like, and it doesn't even have to be a total change. I think people are just wondering, you know, why Sorensen for 100% of the snaps? And so either the snaps are going to decrease and they're going to try to put him more often in a situation where he can succeed, or they'll really dig in and we'll see him on offense as well, and he'll play 110% of the snaps. And so we'll all really enjoy watching that. So what do you think they're going to make changes? Do you think they see this like, okay, we trust Sorensen. He's been a good player for us for a long time, but we can't keep doing the same thing over and over again. Do you think we'll see any change in the secondary, or will they continue to hope that the return of Willie Gay, getting their defensive line healthy, getting Charvarius Ward healthy, will be enough, and they'll stick with the guys that are in the lineup?
Well, you know, that's a lot to unpack there.
Unpack it, Jeff.
I will say that I do agree that, you know, changing Dan Sorensen out is not going to be the fix that changes the way this defense plays. In fact, you know, I remember watching that Stephon Diggs, that long play he had in that game, and Juan Thornton was on the field in that game. He was the other safety, the other deep safety on that play. So, but Spagnuolo likes to play three safeties. He likes to use that. So if Dan Sorensen is not playing, like, who else do you have to be that third safety? You know, and so that's the first question. He's going to be on the field at some point for you. But I do know, talking to a friend of mine who used to be with the Giants back when Spagnuolo was there, we were talking about this situation with the Chiefs, and he said, look, man, it's crazy, but we went through a lot of this back in New York, and if people remember the two Super Bowls, or the Super Bowl wins he had, with one with the Chiefs and one with the Giants back when Strahan and those guys were there in 2007, but they forget 2015 with the Giants. They remember New Orleans, but we had the same kind of struggles here, and he's very loyal to his players, the guys who know the system, and there was a player they had there who he kept on the field for a long period of time, and this guy just kept getting abused and exploited, and he wouldn't change it up. And so I told you guys, I'm at the point with the whole Juan Thornhill, Daniel Sorensen thing where I feel like, look, Thornhill must be a problem one way or another. He must be somebody who'll make it worse than what it already is. Because they're seeing him every day. They know what they want to do. Do I think Willie Gay can help? He's athletic, but he's not going to walk out there and be Ray Lewis. And so, you know, that's, you're asking a lot. I think part of the problem is what they do is so complicated. A lot of people don't give credence to the idea that they probably were overperforming the last few years, that Spagnuolo was getting the best out of limited talent. I say this when I look at what Bashaud Breeland has become in Minnesota. You know, he's not nowhere close to what he was here, and he was only serviceable here. So, yeah, you know, I've heard you talk about blitzing more and all that stuff. This defense isn't built to do that kind of stuff. They're not built to get after the quarterback in that way, because once you start doing that, once you try to make that your identity, you better have people who can cover. And we've already seen that's an issue there as well. So I get where Spagnuolo is stuck in a tough place. The only thing that's going to make this defense better is if they can start playing better up front. They start getting that, if Chris Jones and whoever else you want to throw in there, or Mike Dana, you know, Frank Clark's a lost cause at this stage, but if you could find some way to create a pass rush, that would be the first big step in making everything better.
Well, Jeff, thanks a lot. You've ruined Nate's hopes because he had indicated that he thought Willie Gay might come back and be close to Ray Lewis. And so, you know,
damn it, Jeff!
Nate, I told you to be cautious with that.
You know what? What you're saying, though, like, look, the Chiefs have gone with the game plan of, and I actually, if you can get this, have it be successful, I don't have a problem with it, you know, of let's invest up front, let's get after the quarterback, let's tighten those windows up from the front side and force quarterbacks into quicker decisions, and that'll make the secondary look better, because obviously we've talked about it. They have not invested heavy resources in the secondary. I mean, you're talking about late round draft picks, guys that were traded for late round draft picks, guys that aren't making very much money like Dan Sorensen. Outside of Tyrann Mathieu, they have not invested heavily in those resources. They've invested heavily in a guy that you just called a lost cause in Frank Clark. That, I mean, that's the biggest disaster on this team right now, right? If Frank Clark is in fact a lost cause, as you just said, that's a disaster, because they got to pay him this year, they got to pay him next year, and they've already given up draft picks for him, and that hinders everything else they can do.
Yeah, well, I don't think he's going to be around next year, so at least there's some hope that they would have moved on from it. But yeah, and it's and I think he's done some positive stuff back in 2019, but certainly the last couple of years, it's been lacking. And really, he's there because Breeland Speaks didn't work out. So when you're asking, when you're taking the approach that we're not going to invest heavily in corners, we're not going to find guys who will cover people back there, yeah, you need to have the dudes up front playing better. Now, you know, this brings us back to the whole conversation about when does Chris Jones get moved back inside. It's time to make that move. No matter what, if you're talking about taking risks, I'd rather see that happen and have Mike Dana be a full-time player, which I don't know if he can be that, but I'd rather see that happen than blitzing on every down. I just don't think this. What that does is compound the problem because it creates more opportunities for big plays against talented quarterbacks. And keep in mind, you've got it's not like you're blitzing guys who are statues back there. I think every team they've played has had an athletic quarterback to move around and get outside the pocket and make plays. And so when you're trying to do that and you're sending extra defenders, not only can you get beat down the field, but you can give up a lot of yards just from guys just scrambling around. A guy like Josh Allen, you know, gets out of the pocket and he could run for 40 yards on you. A guy like Lamar Jackson can do that. And so you need to have those guys up front doing a great job. But yeah, as far as Frank Clark, I just felt like it was already bad to begin with. But I don't know how you have a worse start to the most important year you could have with this franchise. From the gun charge to the hamstring problems to the lack of – he's lucky Jaron Reed is here because it's like as invisible as Jaron Reed is, he's making it a little bit easier on people to get on Frank Clark. But like both those guys are like – should be on milk crate somewhere, milk carton somewhere because they are hard to find.
By the way, Jeff, where are you today? Are you on the road? Where do your travels take you?
Yeah, I'm in Denver right now, just for a family thing. But I'm heading out to I'm going to the Arizona Cardinals Cleveland Browns game this weekend from here.
Oh, well, I'm going to ask you about that after this. We'll take a break. Can you come back with us for another segment, Jeff?
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, thank you. That's Jeff Chedia from NFL Network at NFL.com. Back after this with more from Jeff on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I just put a tremendous amount of responsibility on the shoulders of Todd Lebo. So, as you know, this is absolutely the best way I could celebrate the anniversary of my mom's passing. So, Saturday, tomorrow, I'm so excited to be once again emceeing the Step Up for Down Syndrome Walk out in the parking lot at Arrowhead because we had to do it virtual last year. And so we'll be back out there. Some of my favorite people in the world will be at this event tomorrow. Very excited. And then I'll go home and put on my suit like Jake likes me to. And then I'm going to emcee Off the Wall, a wonderful benefit for Sheffield Place. It's going to be at the Exhibition Hall down at Municipal Auditorium. Lebo's going to be there. Attorney Lance is going to be there. And my wife, because I'm going to be there, so because I'm emceeing, and my wife's going to be there. But also Steve St. John Sr. will be solo because his wife can't attend. And so I have asked Todd Lebo and Attorney Lance to help Susan entertain Steve St. John Sr., allow him
quite
to hold
the task.
Hold court at your table for just a few moments and discuss whatever topics of the day you'd like to hear about. And so you're ready for that? It's a lot. All right, then.
I need to take Lawyer Lance to lunch.
Well, there you go. Well, there's going to be, and there will be at least some type of business dealings between my dad and Lance tomorrow. So you stay out of that, Todd. Jeff Chedia rejoins us. You'll be going to see Arizona and Cleveland. And I mean, first of all, Arizona is wildly entertaining to watch. And I root for Kyler Murray because so many people, I guess, didn't think he was going to be what he is right now. And I like him. And the more he does, the more reasonable the comparison that was made between him and Bo Jackson, and the more it irritates Nate, and so we can continue to make that a part of the show, which I like. but, I mean, they haven't lost yet. They're going to be tested at Cleveland. But, I mean, we got to say they're for real. We got to say they're a playoff team. But how good are they, Jeff, and what will we find out after their game against Cleveland? That's a pretty big test for them.
Well, they're really good. And you mentioned this being undefeated, the only undefeated team left in the league right now. But they're really good on both sides of the football. And as much attention as Kyler Murray's gotten for the way he's played, and he's my MVP right now. I know there's a long list. It's a heck of an MVP race. It's going to be one. It comes out of the stretch. There's probably eight or nine guys who are going to be in the mix. He's played at a high level, but you look at what they've done defensively, where they've had, they haven't been as good, and they've made smart decisions. So they drafted well with Isaiah Simmons, you know, a local kid from Clemson, coming over to play linebackers. Zaven Collins, another couple linebackers they picked up from Tulsa in the first round this year. Buda Baker is one of the best safeties in the NFL, maybe the best safety in the NFL right now. You look at Byron Murphy at corner, a second-round pick they got a couple years ago, who's playing well. You know, Chandler Jones had that big five-sack day to start out. It hadn't had any sense, but he's still Chandler Jones and J.J. Watt. So it's like there's a lot of guys over there that have done a really good job for them, and they found a way to really become a complete team. You know, I think about something Patrick Mahomes said after that Buffalo game, where he said, "Great players don't win you championships. Great teams do." And the Cardinals have really bought into that belief that, yeah, they're going to play a college offense and do some interesting things with an unconventional quarterback, but they're also going to put a lot of good pieces around that quarterback to make it easier on them, and that's what you're seeing.
All right, Jeff, I want to. We haven't gotten into.
Let's get into it. I don't even know what you're going to say.
Well, the biggest elephant in the room in the NFL right now, this whole John Gruden thing and all the emails that are flying all over the NFL. Okay. And I want to know what you think of all this.
Okay. let's see.
Let's go.
I'll start with nothing surprised me anymore, not just in sports, but in life, that when you hear things like this, and I've known John Gruden since he became a head coach. I was covering the Oakland Raiders and the 49ers back when Al Davis hired him. So I know what kind of person he is. I've always liked him. I've never had an issue with him. But I also know people who have said disparaging things about him as far as whether he's trustworthy. And I've always noticed that like someone like Andy, there's a zillion players who are always saying, you know, glowing things about him long after they played for him. You don't get a lot of that with Gruden. I've never heard any players say, "Man, what's Gruden up to? I miss Gruden, blah, blah, blah." So I've always thought there was something going on there. Bruce Allen is not one of my favorite people in the NFL. I've always had a dislike for him as a person. I don't think he's a very good person. And so it's not surprising that he was on the other end of those emails and that there was no – I'm curious to see what he says about it, to be honest with you, because he hasn't made any kind of statements or anything. But all these people – have one thing in common with their email correspondence, and he's part of it. And so, look, there's no way Gruden could continue coaching that team after this stuff came out. There's no way you could have an openly gay player, a league that's 70% black, a locker room that's probably over there that's probably even more than that percentage wise that people of color playing for you. You just couldn't overcome that. So I think he made the right decision stepping away. I don't think anybody pointing at him and saying he's just one person doing bad things. I think we live in a culture now where it's become very acceptable to say rude stuff, where civility has lost its way, where decency and respect for others has become an archaic notion. And so, and this has been going on like the last 4 or 5 years. And so it's just people have become way too comfortable with saying things that offend people, not apologizing for it, or even behind closed doors having different opinions. We need to get away from that. And so I'm hoping that the takeaway for me is that people see this and recognize that this is a guy who was in a prominent position with a huge platform, and he was behaving in a way that was unacceptable, and that there are consequences for that. I think there need to be more consequences for that kind of behavior, and I hope that people can see that.
And I'm with you. I think a lot of that, I mean, even though these were emails, but I mean, social media is a big part of that. How many times do any of us get tweets or messages from people saying something that they would just never have the guts to say in public or never think about, so ready to say something, hiding behind a keyboard and just can't wait to,
How many times has somebody said just horrible things to you on social media? Then you actually meet that person. The person, they're like, "Hey, what's up, man? How's it going?"
Yeah.
And they act like they're your buddy. You've said the
worst. And I've told you, I apologize for those emails. You know. I didn't, early on, I tried to, use a different email address, but that clearly didn't work out.
Every morning, man.
Glad. Hey, buddy, how are you?
Yeah.
Hey, thanks.
Actually, when I say hi to you in the morning, you usually go, huh?
Right. Yeah. I don't start talking until 6:01, buddy. Before then, I get paid by the word. I'm like,
I do wonder, though, Jeff, it seems to me a little convenient the NFL's leaking certain things out, however they're leaking out. How much other stuff is under there, right? Like, if John Gruden was sending emails to this one guy, do we think he was the only guy in the league he was sending these kind of emails to? Don't you feel like there must, I don't know, I'm putting words in your mouth. Do you feel like there might be a lot more out there in these 650,000 emails that we don't even know about yet?
Oh, look, you're talking about an organization that's had a lot of issues over the last, whatever, decade or so. And so, yeah, I think there are probably tons of things that are coming. I just saw the thing about Adam Schefter the other day, about him sending a story to Bruce Allen that had to be checked out or edited or whatever term you want to use to apply to it that crossed the line. And, yeah, I would assume that there's some cherry-picking going on by somebody who has access to this stuff, and they're just saying, hey, I don't like this person. I don't like that person. I don't like the way this looks, and I'm gonna make some journalist day. I'm just going to be handing out Christmas gifts. I'm going to be Santa Claus and just be throwing out gifts as I go through all these documents. But, yeah, without question, almost 700,000 emails that they pour through, and that's the only thing that comes out that's sketchy. As far as Gruden's concerned, yeah, no question there's more to it.
So what do you think this does to the Raiders on the field? We talk about distractions and how they can affect the football team. Well, this seems to be quite a distraction for a team that was starting to struggle anyway.
Yeah. Oh, well, and you don't know how much the that issue affected him in the last game they played, because the way I understand it, the timing was stuff came out. He heard about it on Friday, right before they played their game last Friday. So, yeah, it's a huge thing to overcome. Now, it could go one of two ways. It could completely tear this team apart, or it can galvanize them. And they have enough. I think Raiders teams of the past, they probably would fall apart. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt that they actually may come together because of the leadership they have over there, guys like K.J. Wright and Casey Hayward, and I know Jared McCoy's not playing anymore because he's hurt, but you know he's over there. They brought a lot of veterans, and they have a lot of leadership over there. And so I think when you have younger players and you go through this, you kind of lose your way. I don't think they're going to be, you know, go out there and run off whatever 12 straight wins, but I don't think they're going to fall apart. I think they'll probably end up being by a middle of the road team because of it.
All right, rapid fire. I'm just going to ask for some winners. Jake has his pen and pad ready. What's the score going to be between Chiefs and Washington?
I'll take Chiefs 35-31.
Chargers at Ravens.
I'll take Chargers. I'll take Chargers. I think it'll be 28-27.
Let's go, Ravens. I don't say it that often, do I? Boy, that felt weird for me. Come on, Lamar! Cardinals at Browns.
I like the Browns in this one. Mm-hmm. I feel like it, yeah, I like the Browns. I don't know why. The Cardinals are certainly coming in on a high, but I just feel like it's the Browns have to, they had a tough loss against the Chargers last week. I think they'll rebound.
Raiders at Broncos.
I think the Broncos right now. It's coming out. As much as I'm talking about the Raiders galvanizing, I don't think I'll give them a week before they figure out how to galvanize.
no galvanizing yet in time for Sunday. Finally, Monday night.
Concrete.
That's right. Monday Night Football. Bills at Titans. The Chiefs play at Tennessee the following week. And so, will Tennessee be coming off a win or a loss when they play the Chiefs?
Oh, it'll be a loss. Their defense is – the Chiefs are setting the bar pretty high for bad defense, but the Titans are pretty close to them. They don't have anybody over there who scares you defensively. So, I think the Bills just run through them like they ran through – like they run through everybody else the last 4 weeks.
Jeff Chedia from NFL Network and NFL.com. Thank you so much for the time. We will talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Take care.
You take care. That's the man. And he's going to see Arizona at Cleveland. Hell of a football game that he could tell us about next week right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.